are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Hello, welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast. I'm Dual Guest, joined by Richard Donahue. Today's Hello. Episode of the podcast sees us with a brand new slate, a slab of fresh heavy metal to review for you all, our dear listener. We have new single releases from Phobocasm and Ninkarsag, as well as full-length album releases from Cannibal Corpse, Moonlight Sorcery, and Sulfur Aeon. Without further ado, let's get right into the proceedings. The first piece of music we want to talk about today comes to us from Quebec, Canada, and that is Phobocasm. Phobocasm first burst onto the scene back in 2014. Yeah, with their record Deprived. 2 years later, they brought us Bringer of Drought, and now almost 7.5, almost 8 years later, yeah, they are finally back with the conclusion of a trilogy, apparently, Richard was telling me off air,
yes,
with Foreordained. The lead single is called Infomorph. Richard, since you suggested that we discuss it here on the Fundamentalists, I'll let you lead off the discussion.
Yes, as Duel say, it's been 8 years since some new music. And so I was really excited for this to drop. And very impressed by it, because some bands have been kind of disappointing me with long gaps and records and songs. Gothrim Primordial. Sorry, there's some in my throat. But this single really combines everything I love about the band. They have the very atmospheric, crushing fucking doom with the chaotic dissonance of Immolation, one of my favorite bands, which has always been their forte. And the production is fantastic, and it pretty much everything I love in a Phobocasm track. So I would go as far as say it's maybe one of my favorite songs that they've released. So I'm very excited to get my hands on this record, which comes out December 8th through Dark Descent, the best extreme U.S. metal label. And highly recommend it if you're a fan of crushing, chaotic, dissonant death metal.
I thought the track was pretty workmanlike for the first minute or two. As it progresses, though, I think it kind of comes into its own. Its personality kind of develops a little bit, especially around the breakdown. Tell me if you agree with that. This at all, but this band kind of gives me a slight resemblance to Temple of Void in a way, sonically, I think. In that kind of death doom style.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I feel like Temple of Void, though, they kind of go for more that kind of sad boyish catatonia kind of melodies, depressive part. And I feel that with Phobocasm, it's more just oppressive and just crushing you. So I was sad. It's just with the weight of existence. But
Temple of Void is definitely a little bit, like, I guess, consistently slower. There is more of an emphasis on the doomier side of the death metal, or at least the doom never kind of separates itself from the death metal. I don't want to say it's a death doom band 100%. It's not My Dying Bride by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Whereas Phobocasm definitely keeps its death metal edge, even when it slows down, even in the breakdown of the song. It's just, I thought that the band kind of bears more than a passing resemblance to Temple of Void when they slow down and when they kind of catch their groove, or at least really caught my ear on this particular single as well. Since you're much more familiar with their prior work than I am, would you say this is pretty much in line with what you could expect from Phobocasm, or is this a slight departure from their prior releases?
I'd say this, yes, pretty good encapsulation of their style of death metal, because Deprived is more just the straight death metal side with less doom, whereas Bringer Drought kind of split at about 50-50. It was a little more on the doomier side, also being dark and heavy and oppressive. So I think it's a good amalgamation of what they've done in the past. So I expect high results on Foreordained for sure.
Well, we will find out for sure what sort of results were delivered on December 8th, 2023, when Foreordained is released on Dark Descent Records. I'm sure we will give a review pod for the end of the year, and who knows, maybe we'll find our way onto a year-end list.
Hopefully.
Only time will tell. Let's move on to the second single we are going to be talking about today. And that comes to us from a podcast darling, and that is Ninkarsag. So Ninkarsag has been around since 2009. Their first full length, The Blood of Celestial Kings, highly underrated record from 2015, really flew under the radar. And it wasn't really until the Dread March of Solemn Gods that this band really kind of burst onto the scene. Even for me, Dread March of the Solemn Gods made my top 10 list, not only of best black metal, but of albums of the year in 2021 for good reason. It's more than just Dissection Worship. It's just a fucking amazing piece of rock and roll infused black metal with plenty of attitude, yes, plenty of bravado, huge melodies, and epic lyrics. It's like, I don't know, bringing your D&D tabletop game to life right before your eyes, or should I say ears, considering this is the audio medium. And now they're back with a new single called Beneath the Cloak of Nightfall. And to be honest, it sounds like fucking Ninkarsag. pretty much picking right up where the Dread March of the Solemn Gods left off. Pretty much exactly how I described that record. Really up-tempo, melodic black metal with a fantasy element and with huge emphasis on the melody and the driving energy behind the tracks. Basically, if you think of something like Night's Blood from Storm of the Light's Bane, you're on the right track when you think of Ninkarsag. And this track is no different. For better, mostly, but also, not going to lie, I was hoping for something slightly different, maybe a slight change in even tempo or energy, or maybe some slight stylistic differences. You can't really tell with only one track released from an album what the entirety of it will be. So the jury's still out. But if you like Ninkarsag, like I do, and Richard does, and I think most red-blooded black metal fans do, I think you're going to dig this single, and by extension, probably the new album. But if you were hoping for breaking new ground or new ice, I don't think this is it. Richard, what was your impression from this single?
Son of a bitch. Fuck you.
That's your impression of the single?
No, I thought I viewed it. No, that was not my impression. Clean Edit 1, 2, 3. Actually, I discovered this today.
There was no point in saying Clean Edit. That's staying in 100%, bro.
Okay. Anyways, cut the Clean Edit part out. Anyways, I actually discovered this today on Black Belt Productions, the YouTube page. Just out of the blue, it came on my feed. Oh, no, new Ninkarsag. Hell yeah. Pop that bitch on.
Bro, and, I talk about this. I talk about that YouTube channel all the time in the pod.
Yeah, great shit. But I will say it's a bit more on the mid side I would like, but I feel it really picks up once the guitar solo hits. And after that, I feel the song really takes off because the first part's kind of standard verse, chorus. You know, it's the Ninkarsag, but I feel it really does shine after the solo and onward, especially the kind of spoken word talking part, which I know Black Mike's a little more epic, you know, a little more dramatic, I guess. Call me a sucker for that type of shit, but it really takes off from there, and do enjoy it though. I felt they kind of trimmed a little bit of fat off. It's like 7 minutes and 40 seconds long. It kind of been up there, maybe a little more fierce, a little tighter, but still a killer song, and I'm very stoked to hear what the rest of the EP is, which is called The Black Swords of Winter on Vendetta Records, and there's no album release date known yet, but they said very soon that will be known.
I mean, that album title is just red meat for the bass.
Oh yeah, Black Swords of Winter,
fist pumping black metal. Like the arm gauntlet just grew 666 more studs just hearing it, you know. I'm ready for it. When is that released?
It's to be announced. It's not been announced yet. They said soon they will announce the release date, but it's not available yet, unfortunately. I would definitely be sharing that with everybody.
Hopefully it's out before the end of the year. I'm trying to think of the last couple of big releases before the end of the year. I know Panopticon, I think, is coming out end of November. And that's, I think, this was one of the last big releases on my radar, at least off the top of my head right now. There's 100% something I'm overlooking. It's just now that we are into October, the top 10 list, the top albums of the year are starting to really come into focus. And I need to start putting it all together for top black metal releases of 2023, as well as putting together a top 10. And we'll have to fish down our old friend Bogrovich and see if he wants to come on for a year-end review pod. You know, we'll see.
Definitely. Hell yeah. Yeah. Definitely need to, I'll say this some more. I'll be honest, minus the pod, I've heard a lot of new music this year. I've been kind of honestly stuck in the past, this past year, you know, going back, buying physical copies of some of my favorite bands, like Agloc, Iced Earth, Mind by Paris. I've been kind of on that kick the past pretty much most this year. So, I need to get around to it. So definitely some shit I love this year. Like New In Flames is great. New Catatonia is a nice return to form. New Necrofire, it's kind of more what you'd expect from it. It's a little more epic with a little better production. So
the Catatonia record's cool, but like, I don't know. Is it even metal? Why are we talking about it on this pod? We already talked about it
once. Fair point. It's more rock, actually. So I'm a diehard. So,
Disturbed-esque. You know,
New Ahab, which I've brought up in a while, that's a banger too of a record. See, that makes
some great stuff. There's been some great stuff.
That's a fucking
New Ahab, Dawn Raid, yeah, Imperium Decadence, Hell Ripper, Cattle fucking Capitation.
Great record. Better than Death Atlas. Fuck what anybody says.
spoiler alert, top three record of the year.
I definitely see that 1,000%.
Yeah. Okay. Before that, do we have some new challengers late in the game here in October to join the album of the year list? We do have some big names, some podcast darlings, Moonlight Sorcery and Sulfur Aeon, as well as heavyweights in the world of death metal in the form of Cannibal Corpse. How do they fare? How do their new releases stack up to their already formidable discographies? We're here to let you know. Let's start off with Sulfur Aeon, shall we? Their new release, Seven Crowns and Seven Seals, just released on the 13th, 2 days ago. So I haven't gotten a chance to
presses.
Yeah, haven't gotten a chance to listen to this one quite as much as the other two. Sulfur Aeon comes to us from North Rhine-Westphalia in Germany, one of my dear, dear German black metal darlings, not in least because their lyrical themes is almost entirely focused on H.P. Lovecraft, Lovecraftian horror, and the Cthulhu mythos. Their first record, Swallowed by the Ocean's Tide, not only has one of my favorite album artworks of all time, but I think it's one of this band's, probably is this band still to this date, their best record, and one of my favorite black metal releases overall.
That's great.
Of the 2010s. Fantastic. They followed that up with Gateway to the Antisphere and The Scythe of Cosmic Chaos. Those two albums are both solid to good in their own right, without measuring up to Swallowed by the Ocean's Tide. Does Seven Crowns and Seven Seals add up? Well, in my opinion, yes and no. Mostly no. I would say my biggest complaint with Seven Crowns and Seven Seals is that it takes too long to get going. And I don't mean tempo-wise, because it certainly starts off with a bang, plenty of blast beats, and really aggressive black metal that you might not necessarily expect from Sulfur Aeon, at least not stylistically, I guess you could say. However, the clean vocals, while not necessarily a new introduction, they've been around ever since the first album. I feel like here they're very much supposed to be a centering point for all the tracks and really the album as a whole. Think Shamash. Think A Paradigm of Beauty by Shamash. And that's kind of where these clean vocal sections are coming in on, but they don't always hit. And sometimes I feel like they're kind of actively disrupting the rhythm of the song or kind of killing the momentum. Not all the time. Sometimes it hits. I did say that this album really finds its stride in the last three tracks, Arcane, Cambrian Sorcery. Seven Crowns and Seven Seals coming in at 8 minutes and 55 seconds. It damn well better be good at just under 9 minutes. trumped only by Beneath the Ziggurats, coming in at 9 minutes and 14 seconds. Not that the first four tracks are bad, but I was actively finding myself wondering, when is this album going to grab me, somewhere between track 3 and track 4? And thankfully it did, starting with track 5. Richard, what were your impressions from Seven Crowns and Seven Seals?
First of all, I'd be straight up front, I fucking love this record. Hell, it may be my favorite in the whole discography. Not their best, let me swear. There's best and favorite, two separate things. The best is probably still their debut record. But this may be my favorite for the fact that it is their most melodic, and it's probably the most atmospheric as well. And probably the biggest praise of this record is the solos.
Yes, yes.
Great, and they sound fucking great too. Like the production, I'm just reverb, or not, I'm not a guitar player, so I'm not familiar with all these terms, but they just sound fantastic. They're played fantastically, and it's the most expressive Silverman record for sure. And I feel the clean vocals are a lot better integrated on this record as comparison to Scythe of Cosmic Chaos, which,
well, they kind of have to be because they take center stage here. Like, they can't just be shoehorned in. And you make a great point about the guitar leads. They do add a great bit of personality to this record. Probably one of the standout bits of this record, honestly, are the guitar leads. Possibly the most expressive of their discography.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a clear, the vocals have been more of a dramatic flair to them, which I've read in some interviews, just browsing before recorded, about being sort of gothic. And I kind of see that. I don't listen to that personally, but I kind of see how someone might construe it that way. But I think they're integrated better. And again, I probably think this is my favorite of all their records. Again, not their best, but probably my favorite overall. There's a bit of a catchiness, too, that maybe the other records didn't have. And I feel maybe this one has a bit more of their own identity, whereas the first three records, they are killer. But to me, at least, remind me of later, like, Demigod and Up Behemoth and classic Hypocrisy from, like, the 90s to, like, 2001, around that era. But this, to me, feels like they're kind of coming to their own. So, just my thoughts on it.
I don't know how much longer they can continue to ride the Lovecraft thing, but it's still working for me. It still just conjures up images of like the climax of stories like the Dunwich Horror, speaking these passages to these elder things, these elder gods. And that's been a theme ever since like their first record, like don't fix what's not broken. So I don't know how much longer they can continue to do just the Lovecraftian chants out into the void as they continue to do, but right now it's still working. And
I mean,
it's working as well as it ever has, lyrically speaking.
I mean, you say that, I'm on a market like 12 fucking records. So they've stretched the Viking shit like paper fucking thin. They're still goddamn doing it.
But when was the last Amon Amarth record that you really gave a shit about?
The one after Twilight and the Thunder God, Search Horizon from 2012, I think, somewhere in that range. That's the last one I gave a fuck about. And the following ones, it's there.
Well, I hate to break it to you, sir, but that was fucking 11 years ago.
I know.
We're getting old, bro.
Oh, so, I'm 34. This year has flown by. Trust me, I know. We're getting old. It's hit me real hard this year.
All right, not to get off track here. Let's go ahead and final thoughts for Seven Crowns and Seven Seals from Sulfur Aeon. Slightly plodding in the beginning for me. Great guitar leads. When they hit, the clean vocals are fantastic. However, they're a bit of a mixed bag for me. I'm going to say this is their second best record overall.
Yes.
It is good, not necessarily great, which is probably indicative of this band as a whole. I feel like they've got three solid to good records and one great record. I'm going to give Sulfur Aeon, since there's only two of us, for those of you who might have not heard an episode before, we're both going to give a score out of 5 and average them together, and that'll be the final score. I'm going to give Seven Crowns and Seven Seals a 3.8 out of 10.
I agree with most of your points, minus the cleans, I think, do work on this record, minus that middle part of Seven Crowns, Seven Seals, where it repeats the same refrain like five or six times. That section to me, it's a bit much. Minus that, I think it works fantastically. Again, I love this record. I think this may be, you know, I'm not calling it, but album of the year material, possibly. Maybe not. We shall see. But I think it was great, and I'm going to give it a 4.2.
Holy shit. Okay.
Dig the fuck out of this record. It's, I didn't expect this, to be honest. It was like, hits just right for me.
So Sulfur Aeon, Seven Crowns, and Seven Seals gets an 8 out of 10 from the Fundamentalist podcast. Our next review, another Fundamentalist podcast, darling, especially of Richard Donahue and I here. They come to us from Finland, and that is Moonlight Sorcery. Moonlight Sorcery burst onto the scene with their EP entitled Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity last year. It made our best of black metal list, and for damn good reason.
Fuck yeah.
Tracks like The Wolven Hour, For Thy Light Is Ice, and Halta Altari were just perfect, downright danceable slabs of black metal. The perfect amount of synths, 80s bravado, and frostbitten black metal riffage all blended together fucking perfectly. And I do not use that word lightly. Perfectly. Yes, and so
100%.
They had a follow-up EP, Nightwind, The Conqueror from the Stars, which was good. Really good. Right. Did not meet the same standard of Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity. Now they're finally back. I say finally. It was less than a year between putting out two EPs.
Two EPs, now full length.
Finally. Yeah, their first full length, Horned Lord of the Thorned Castle. And just as that epic title gives away, this shit is epic. Not only in its fantastic lyrical setting, not only in that 80s bravado, which is back with a bang, not only in the fantastic leads, not only with the black metal songs perfectly accentuated with synths, it's like Children of Bodom on crack, but better and not nearly as cheesy. I mentioned in the Fundamentalist podcast Slack channels, like, this band was guided by the hand of Alexi Laiho. All the best parts of Bodom are here and none of the excess. All the best parts of Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity are here and none of the excess. Not that there was any excess on Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity. The lead single from this record, In Coldest Embrace, I'm just going to go ahead and say it's track two. I think this is the best track on the record. Goddamn, like, balls to the wall, start to finish, grabs you, rips you up out of the seat. It takes you on a journey and does not let go. Really, the album does, from the first track to Withhold the Day, all the way through Suit and Tie, The Wolven Hour Part 2. I'm sorry, if you're going to call yourself The Wolven Hour Part 2, you better fucking bring it. And it does. If not to the same level as The Wolven Hour. I think I've glazed up this record enough just off the top, so I'll let Richard get in on the conversation here. Sir, you are also a huge fan of this band. Give me your initial thoughts on Horned Lord of the Thorned Castle.
Well, I had very high expectations, needless to say, especially with the amazing first EP and a half a great EP, the second one. So I still want to hoping it would make the mark, and I'd say for the most part it does, especially, I mean, it, right out the gate with To Withhold the Day, just majestic fucking keyboards, leads, driving, great fucking vocals, stellar production, you know. Another song I very much enjoy the record, The Secret of Streaming Blood, fucking epic, a little thrashy, probably a very Bodom-esque song in particular. Definitely has that heavy vibes for sure. And it just goes. It's very, very fucking awesome.
It never loses momentum, even when there's extended periods of instrumentation. Like on track four, Yon Silma. It's one of my favorite tracks. I know you said that was probably your least favorite on the record, which is baffling to me, but whatever, we'll let that go. Even their instrumental track, The Moonlit Dance of the Twisted Jester's Blood-Soaked Rituals, it just never lets go.
Awesome.
Never lets go. Fire Burns the Horizon, killer. Into the Silvery Shadows of Night, Castlevania-esque bad assery, sir.
Fuck yeah, man.
The leads are killer.
Verhan and Taka as well.
Yes. Track five. It's really rare that you find black metal where they're setting the fretboard on fire lead wise. Like, it's like speed metal riffage, fantastic leads, but there's also hints of evil here too. Like, but they'll actually slow it down. I think it's Into the Silvery Shadows of Night where it really slows down. It's almost like depressive DSBM for a second. It's like, holy shit. Showing off the dynamism over here, Moonlight Sorcery. I'm with it. If the first seven tracks are them on stage with their leather gauntlets and sunglasses, and track eight is them in their fucking black hood staring at their shoes, it's all done equally well, in my opinion.
And one thing I will say that I don't find a lot in black metal, but there's lots of ebb and flow, ups and down, peaks and valleys, this record, where it's not just a constant, which that can be badass one day, but it can get really fucking boring. It's like two or three, four records in a row of that same goddamn thing. But there's lots of variety, lots of ebb and flow, and it's fucking fantastic.
And it's memorable, despite the fact that the vocals are all
It's
still memorable. It's up there with a prime Immortal, super melodic, fantastic leads, dripping with personality, cheesy, but not too cheesy to where you're like, all right, come on. Children of Bodom was cheesy, but it definitely went overboard at times. And I never think this out. I think this album never does. I don't even think it's close. It takes the perfect amount of each one of its influences and blends them together seamlessly, effortlessly, while still sounding uniquely themselves. Really hard to do, but they make it seem so fucking easy. 4.6 out of 5 for me.
I very much has he had great record, awesome debut, and hopefully this is just a building block of the next one being better, but I'm gonna give this one a 3.8 out of 5.
Wow, really?
Yeah, that was great. I like it a lot, but I don't know, this is Self-Rayon just fucking tipped me just that right way.
Moonlight Sorcery's Horn Lord of the Thorn Castle gets an 8.4.
Fuck yeah.
Finally.
I praise.
Rounding out this show is death metal royalty. Cannibal Corpse. They're back yet again with another release. Back in 2021, Eric Rutan joined the fold after Pat O'Brien was arrested and forced from the band because he had issues that were brought to light, shall we say. Not dwelling on the negative, Cannibal Corpse are back, following up with that fantastic Violence Unimagined record with Chaos Horrific. 10 new tracks of perfectly serviceable, always brutal, always easily identified as Cannibal Corpse tracks. From start to finish, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This record sets a standard, and it never drops below that standard, but goddamn, it never really goes above it either, outside of the final track to me, Drain You Empty. Now, what do you call a standard that never changes? It kind of looks like a flat line, doesn't it? Not to say that the record's lifeless, because goddamn, it's Cannibal Corpse. They definitely are throwing every trick that they know at you. It's just at this point, this is what, their 14th or 15th record? I'm not sure how many tricks Cannibal Corpse has left in the bag that you haven't heard five times already. It's a perfectly serviceable Cannibal Corpse record. It's not as good as Violence Unimagined, the first Eric Rutan record. But even that one, I did not find myself going back to that often outside of three or four really standout tracks. This one, outside of the final track, my favorite, Drain You Empty, I'm not sure how often I'm going to come back to this record. And that sounds so bad, because this is solid, perfectly solid, perfectly serviceable.
Workmanlike, if you will.
Workmanlike, yes. I found myself nodding my head. I went and did a workout when I was listening to this record, and the whole time I was like, all right, Corpse, they still got it. But at no point in time did I ever stop my workout to like listen, like, okay, bros, you got me here. Like this, like you're now we're cooking. That never happened.
I was actually washing the dishes while listening to it. As you're saying, this is a solid Cannibal Corpse record. But there were two songs to me that stood out on this record. Now these two songs don't touch the power trio of Inhuman Harvest, Condemnation, Contagion, and Surround, Kill, Devour from Violence Unimagined. But I feel that the tracks Bloodline, which is ironically a single, which is most never the case for when it comes to bands, and Vengeful Invasion, I feel those songs kind of are head and shoulders above the rest of them. Not to say those aren't bad, they're very good. And I will say Eric Rutan is the ace of the whole of this record. He still brings, especially solos. Don't piss Pat O'Brien. I mean, Pat O'Brien was poached from Nevermore in 96 or so after the Politics of Ecstasy. He was so good. But after seven, eight records with them, it was always kind of a bit standard. And Eric definitely brings new life in, especially the solos really stand out, and a kind of a heavier thrash vibe with the riffs too, which is really cool. But again, it's not quite done the same fresh effect that Violence Unimagined had.
Yeah,
I think the high point of the record for sure.
The word you said, fresh, I think is what it is. Like everything that they do is perfectly serviceable. Everything that they do works. It's just nothing that they do right now is like makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck anymore. It's like when you're spoiled by like a really good sports team, they're playing a team and you know they're going to win. And so nothing they do impresses you, even if they are impressive. So maybe it's just the way that Cannibal Corpse is so consistent that they've just spoiled their fan base and the metal fandom at large for so long that maybe this record is fucking phenomenal. I don't know. But to me, it's just more Corpse. I'm going to listen to Kill 10 more times before I listen to this one once.
Yeah, that are two in the classic shit, two in the Mutilated Barns and shit. Yeah, for sure. Or the Bleeding. So I will call out this song, Some Your Sacrifice. Well, all right, song, but I think the guitar solo is especially phenomenal. I think it's maybe the most melodic guitar solo I've heard like any Cannibal Corpse song ever, and it's super fucking cool. But that's about it as far as comments for this fucking record. No offense.
Yeah. I mean, I guess negatives. I don't have any negatives. Like for real. Like there's nothing I would necessarily change. There's nothing like that sucks. That didn't work. It just feels like, I don't know, a band on its victory lap.
Or they're like the umpteenth time. Like, oh boy, they won again.
There's nothing left. There's nothing left to prove. Alex Webster is God. Corpse Grinder is a phenomenal live vocalist still. It's like, I think I've seen Cannibal Corpse 16 or 17 times live. Damn. Like
4 or 5 at this point. They always bring it. Like, I'm never excited to see them until they play. And then I'm stoked because like Cannibal Corpse just start playing like fuck yeah, let's fucking go.
That's a good way to put it. Although I would say I'm always excited to see them, even though I already know when they finish their song, like that they finish their set. Corpse Grinder's like this is the last song, and then they just all stand there and he's like, I lied. I think that's happened.
I'm so happened. Over the fake encore.
17 times so the same stage banter. 17 times. It's like. You know what's coming. I don't care.
Yeah.
There's something special. There's something special about a 50-year-old man saying, this next song's about shooting blood from your cock.
Come blood. And there's always the one guy that throws something out. I'm going to fucking kill you, dickhead. It's always like the same thing. But I think my most vibrant Cannibal Corpse memory was I was seeing them at Summer Slaughter 2012 and played him up here with Exhumed, Goat Whore, The Faceless, Between the Buried and Me, and Cannibal Corpse co-headliner. Weirdest co-headliner I've ever fucking seen. Between the Buried played for fucking ever. Like, I'm just like, I watch. Are you done? Are you done with your fucking
13? I saw that tour. I saw that tour in Atlanta.
Summer Slaughter, yeah, 2012.
I got the show free because Goat Horse did a fundraiser for a new band. They didn't get it.
Goat Horse was on that one.
So I got like a, he actually got me did for free. Like got like a pass, so I was able to get the show free, which is cool. But
I think Origin played it too. I mean, they were always on Summer Slaughter.
They played it. So I don't think they were on that one. But anyways, like the set's done, and then I'm walking out of the pit, and all of a sudden they rip right into a stripped, raped, and strangled my favorite Cannibal Corpse songs. Like, oh, back to the pit. But all was a good time. Yeah, it's they played it recently. The show sold out with Mayhem, Gore Guts, and Blood Incantation. So well, this will be the Wednesday. It was a killer time.
Yeah, Jopher Cowboy was on that year. Hate Eternal was on that year. And Veil of Maya, like they fucking played, they played almost every single fucking year.
I remember going. I was like Exhumed, the Faceless, Jopher. I remember. I know it's fucked up. Is that fucked? I know I saw Exhumed. And that band, Cerebral Hemorrhage, whatever is that? It was a band like Belgian band with the chick vocalist. They're like a big thing. Like she's like, oh shit, you're doing growls, so fucking cool, dude. And then they end up like they, you know, she left the band. And she saw like YouTube death metal covers and shit. And then they got a male guy. And don't give a fuck about the band anymore.
I wrestled a bear once.
No, it's like a death metal death grind band. But I just can't remember their names. So that
fucking Summer Slaughter. That was such a fucking blast from the past. Like. I remember seeing Necrophagist and Decapitated on one of those Summer Slaughter bills. Like they some killer shit. Killer shit. Anyway, let's get back to the Cannibal Corpse here. Final thoughts here on final thoughts here on Chaos Horrific from Cannibal Corpse.
Reliable, consistent, some good tracks. So I will also call out the Tau track's very good and
I think Chaos Horrific, the title track, I think actually is the track that's most guilty, or at least the one you could accuse the most of mailing it in.
Maybe I still enjoy it. This is personal. And Pitchfork Impalement, it's a cool little solo. I think it's a fun song title, Pitchfork Impalement, but gets the job after like Cannibal, but it ain't breaking any fucking molds. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Obituary made a whole fucking career. Why not Cannibal Corpse at this point? I'm going to give this album a 3.2 out of 5.
Summon for Sacrifice and Bloodblind are also cool, but like I said in the very beginning of my opening thoughts, really only Drain You Empty made me think, okay, Cannibal Corpse, let's see what you're doing here.
It's almost simple. I do enjoy it. It kind of reminds me of like an old school thrash song in a way, a lot heavier than old school thrash. So kind of got that vibe from it.
So, it adds the dissonance a little bit there. It just kind of breaks up the monotony of the previous nine tracks.
Yeah,
it kind of
starts off slow and thick and heavy. I do like the first one very much. So,
yeah, so I'm not going to be quite as harsh as you. 3.2, I think, is a little low. I'm going to give it a 3.5. So, Chaos Horrific, it's a 6.7 from us here at the Fundamentalist Podcast. But you, what do you think, dear listener? What do you think of Phobocosm and Ninkar Sog's new singles? What about the new full lengths from Cannibal Corpse, Moonlight Sorcery, or Sulfur Aeon? Or what about any other release that we may have missed here on the podcast? Please let us know by reaching out to us on the Instagram or the Facebook, now under Richard Donahue's moderation, or by sending us an email to thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening. Richard, any final words for the dear guests at home?
Let metal rule and hail Satan. That's all I got.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. For the Fundamentalist Podcast, I'm Dual Guess. Thank you so much for listening, and we will speak with you next time.